Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. We will be discussing the content in a minute. I'm going to play a brief song. Introduction before I pull Albert in. Thanks for calling in. Albert, he was on the line. Hopefully he'll call back in. Anyways, let me just jump back to the song a minute. Albert and Ben on the line. I hope I don't lose one of you again. So I'm going to do a brief 2-minute intro and then I'll pull both of you in. So tonight I was looking for a topic to research, and since Turkey is in the gateway from the Middle Eastern world into Europe and they're in a geopolitical hot spot, it's always been kind of honed in on by Russia in the Dardanelles Straits. And it's just south of Greece, that is not really encouraging of the Muslim lifestyle. In Greece, in some areas, it's even illegal to build a mosque. And then it's also the gateway to northern Africa and the most critical areas of the Middle East. So I was trying to discover the Turkey and coup that happened July 15th a year ago, and this is what I discovered. The National Intelligence Agency in Turkey is called MIT. So there was a leak from the inside of the military, which branched off as part of the junta and became the coup. They were going to have 3 helicopters fly over Istanbul and attack certain segments of the military brass and also the presidency. So the Boga Ziki and the Fatih Sultan Mehmet bridges in Istanbul were closed by the military once those helicopters came into being and started hitting their targets. The army reacted quickly because there was a leak, and the coup, which was called a Peshmet or something like that, they attacked early too because they heard about the leak. So what happened generally is the military got prepared quickly, and the coup protesters started hitting targets very quickly. For example, F-16s flew low over Ankara, a major city in Turkey, and then there was an officer club named the Fenerbahce, which was another coup target. Sergeant Omar Halis Demir was killed, and he was a part of the military brass. He killed Major General Semi Terzi, who was the coup leader, who wanted to seize the Special Forces headquarters. And that was their first main goal, is to seize the Special Forces. Coup plotters killed civilians at Congo Quarry who happened to resist. Now, at this point, there were some other interesting things I'll bring up in a minute. Coup plotters bombed Special Ops Training Center, which was located in Golbasi in Ankara. And in Ankara, from the air and on the ground, the coup plotters opened fire on the MIT, which once again was the National Intelligence Agency. They also took hold of the Ataturk airport and the air traffic. And then President Erdogan, who had been on vacation, made a live video cell phone conference call to the public and told them to take to the streets. Now, in America, I would find that rather irresponsible if a president tells their civilian population to go into the streets when there's open fire. All the mosques in the country reacted with a funeral prayer called Salah, and they jointly decided to resist the coup. Now, I'm sure nobody but the insiders knew who the coup plotters were. And the deputy chief of staff, Yasser Gular, Gulip Menti, and the land commander of the Turkish army, Salih Zeki Kolak, were taken into hostage situation by the coup leaders. Kisiskli, which is an area where the police headquarters are, there were 2 top military taken hostage there. The police quarters was attacked and one of the main government buildings. Now, all this happened in one night, but what it generally tells us, not so much the tiny details, but a inner branch of the Turkish military was able to plan something, take control, and destroy a lot of buildings and kill civilians, including taking control of the airport, all in one night. With that, we can discuss this geopolitical strategy in the northern Middle East and Central Europe after I pull my 2 co-hosts in. Good evening, Albert and Ben. Albert was the first to call in.
Good evening.
Yeah.
Go ahead, one at a time.
I'm good.
So I just thought.
I remember.
Ben had brought up some information, so Ben, I'll let you go next. You had texted me some information, but I was just trying to think of a topic tonight. It was just the basis of what we could talk about. There's other things we can talk about, too.
Oh, I remember about this this Turkey coup. I remember thinking about wondering who was behind it and how far it was going to go, because I know we have nukes over there. So I didn't know what was going to happen, if that's what they were after, if something was going to go down.
No, I think it started out, to the best of my memory, that there was a group of Kurds in the eastern part of the country that felt dissed by the presidency. And it was... Can I just read two sentences? It might make more sense. On July 15, 2016, a coup d'etat was attempted in Turkey against state institutions, including but not limited to the government and President Erdogan. The attempt was carried out by a faction within the Turkish armed forces that organized themselves at the Peace at Home Council. They attempted to seize control of several places in Ankara, Istanbul, and elsewhere, but failed to do so after forces loyal to the state defeated them. And by the way, a lot of those people loyal were just regular civilians. The government accused the coup leaders of being linked to the Gulen movement, which is designated as a terror organization in Turkey led by Fethullah Gulen, a Turkish businessman and a cleric who lives in Pennsylvania. Erdogan accused Gulen of being behind the coup, a claim that Gulen denies. So I know it had something to do with the Kurds that live in the East Turkish area, who's been discriminated against, but I don't know a lot about it. The reason I thought I'd talk about it is because it's in Central Europe, and at one time Turkey tried to get into the EU, but I believe they were rejected. So, do you guys know anything more about that organization?
No, but I thought there was a little bit of controversy about, well, during the coup, they were talking about a one-country religion, basically. Erdogan made it mandatory to be one religion, didn't he?
I think so, and there was also a problem with their legislature that there was an establishment of a multi-party democracy in Turkey in 1946, and a lot of the people in the smaller factions were underrepresented. So there was some fighting on a religious level on women's dress. Here, let me just read this part. In 1946, the Turkish Armed Forces, named TSK, with the judiciary, has viewed themselves as the guardians of Kemalist ideals and secular Turkish national state or values against political parties that promoted a larger role for Islam and minorities in public life. The military and judiciary have regularly intervened in politics to block or ban parties that represent conservative Muslim Turks who were attempting to relax restrictions on traditional practices in women's dress. So it sounds like it was kind of a religious conflict in one level. So what were you going to tell me today about Israel? Because I read something that there was an attack in Amman, Jordan, and both sides of those war died, like some Israelis and some Palestinians.
No, this was a murder. This was in the West Bank, I guess, and it was a family. It was a father and a son and a daughter, and I think the daughter was pregnant. I think some people got stabbed and survived also, but the pictures were gruesome. There was blood all over the floor in that place, and
person a notable person? Like, why did they target that family?
I don't know. It didn't say anything in the article about it. The one thing that raised my eyebrow was that they showed, I saw a Twitter of the mom praising the son for that murder, saying that she hopes that Allah will be pleased with what he did.
That's not cool.
That wasn't in the... No, and it wasn't in the article that I read. I saw... I don't know where the video came from that was on YouTube, but... Or, I mean, on Twitter. But
how did you find it? Were you looking in one of your non-mainstream sources?
I was just flipping through. You know how they have, you know, those long lists of different headline things? I have no idea where it came from. I could probably go back and find it. But
I was just going to tell you one more thing about the Turkish coup, then I'll let Albert go and see what he has to say this week. When they did do that coup on the evening of July 15th, they were trying to protect democracy from Erdogan, like they didn't believe he was effectively carrying it out. But after the coup ended, Erdogan, there was a curfew, martial law, and a preparation of a new constitution announced by Erdogan, who was on holiday in a seaside town. And over the course of the violent night, TV stations were raided, explosions all over, protesters shot at, and the parliament and presidential buildings fired on. And then in the morning, after the coup people discovered that they weren't going to get public support, they took off their military clothing, they laid down their weapons, and they surrendered. So I'm pretty sure they were severely punished. Because the reason I found this story is because there was this reporter who had been arrested and has been in prison 9 months, and they closed 130 news agencies. Now, that is a little scary considering that Turkey is on the edge of Greece, and it isn't that far from Europe, and it just seems to be more upheaval in the world. So... But what do you guys want to talk about tonight? I mean, I can't go on and on about Turkey if nobody knows anything about it. So, and plus, sometimes maybe we should plan ahead. Like, I should start texting you guys on Saturday. But Don called me an hour ago and was confused about when the show started because he's in the Eastern time zone tonight, which is an hour ahead of me.
Oh.
So he might be calling in. I use the NAACP convention as a possible headliner, but if he doesn't, I can always change things. Like, what's, Ben, you also mentioned, what's on your mind tonight, Albert?
No, I'm good.
So you just, well, thanks
Nothing.
For calling in. Has anyone noticed anything in the national news that's been significant?
Yeah, the Philippines story kind of disappeared, didn't it, about the martial law?
You mean the ISIS? Yeah, it disappeared, but I can look it up while you guys are talking. You mentioned in your text, Ben, there's... new restrictions to North Korea. Americans can't visit there. There's more Russian sanctions. And what's going on in Iran?
I don't know. The headline said there's sanctions being put together, or maybe they're already put together, for Iran, Russia, and North Korea. First of all, why would anybody want to go to North Korea? I mean, do we really need to say, no, you shouldn't go there as a country?
That's what
I
was thinking. When you
there is that but for North Korea. You're not allowed to go into North Korea and, you know, videotape whatever you want and whatnot. But there is that guided, you know, kind of, secretly military guided bus tour, where you can go on a different path. You have to follow the path that the tourists sent you through. So, you know, and that's for, you know, and a lot of, independent media and whatever media take those bus tours because they're the only way they can get in and check out, you know, North Korea. And that's,
but,
you know, that's about it.
Why would we give them hostages, basically?
I was wondering why that kid Otto was even in North Korea, the one who died of a coma.
Yeah, well,
he was
going there. What I read was that he promised somebody he would bring him back something, and he stole something from over there. And
he took a poster down, which he considered propaganda. I didn't know that much.
Right, but it seems like that would be the last thing you'd want to do, is go into North Korea and actually steal something from there.
I think he probably impulsively ripped it down off of a wall, and he wasn't even thinking straight.
No, he told somebody back home that he would sell it for a certain amount of money.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And, you know, the thing is, if you hear a lot of defectors from North Korea going into South Korea and, you know, defecting, you don't hear any stories or anything about any defector from South Korea going to North Korea, you know? And I don't even know if that's even happened or, you know? And maybe one person, who knows? But even if there were any defectors, the Western media wouldn't cover that. But, I would be surprised to even hear a story like that, that's for sure.
Well, my first reaction when I heard there was travel restrictions to North Korea was the same as Ben's, that I'm sure less than 50 people a year from the U.S. go to North Korea. And I'm pretty sure there's no student exchange programs or anything like that. So to me, it didn't make a lot of sense. Maybe it was just one thing that the military thought that they could be, Trump administration thought they could be successful at without anyone raising a fuss.
Well, I think it's tactics, you know, because, look at the tactics, you know, the Western media used on, you know, in Libya when they were talking basically smack about Gaddafi, and they also talked smack, you know, and then before they took over, you know, and they came into Iraq, they talked smack about Saddam too. And so the Western media tends to do that. So, you know, they find any kind of evidence or anything they can use on there, and they use it, you know. And so with, Kim Jong-un, you know, the leader of North Korea, you know, I mean, he already seen what happened to, you know what I mean, out to Saddam and Gaddafi and whatnot. So I would understand why he is overstressed or over tight, you know what I mean? To not want any mainstream media, mostly the Western media from the mainstream media to come over and try to develop a fake story generate a story against him and stuff like that. So, of course, you know, but what about independent news stations? I mean, I guess he's over.
I did read an article that China is still doing free trade with North Korea, or maybe not free, but they're not really restricting their trade with North Korea since America's tightened up. So, if Trump wants to play hardball, he can't rely on China.
No.
Now, I just found four resolutions on one page. Resolution 1718. In 2006, it demanded that North Korea cease nuclear testing and prohibited exports and military supplies there. But then it was reinforced this year in March of 2016 with Resolution 2270 after the fourth nuclear test demonstrated that North Korea was getting more successful. That resolution banned gold, Vanda, vanadium, titanium, and rare earth metals. The export of coal and iron were also banned. Remember you brought up titanium last week or uranium?
I brought up lithium.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm shy of accuracy.
And of course, our government will be scared of any country they don't trust, or basically not just the countries, just the dictators they don't trust, the leaders of those countries that are not under their paycheck, that do nuclear bombs or develop any other tests. As long as, as their allies, they got nuclear bombs, that's okay. But the U.S., they did, right here in the USA, we did a lot of nuclear testing back in the days, But we don't have to do that anymore because we already know how stuff works, But when it's another country, then, it becomes a big deal.
We perceive ourselves as guardians of the universe, but when someone else does it, they're a threat. That's pretty much what you're saying.
It's true what you said, but that's how the government perceives this country. Not the people, not the hardworking people at the bottom, but yeah.
In February of 2016, there was a comprehensive North Korea sanction and policy enforcement initiated by Obama and passed unanimously practically in the House of Reps and Senate. Let me just read it quick because the one that was sent through in 2013 failed to pass. It requires the president to sanction entities found to have contributed to North Korea's weapons of mass destruction, arms trade, human rights abuses. So I don't know what they mean by entities, like if it's private businesses. It imposes mandatory sanctions for entities involved in North Korea's mineral or metal trades, which comprise a large part of North Korea's foreign exports. It requires the U.S. Treasury Department to determine whether North Korea should be listed as a primary money laundering concern, which would trigger tough new financial restrictions, and it would impose new sanctions authorities related to North Korean human rights abuses and violations of cybersecurity. So I did hear a thing on NPR that a lot of North Koreans have smartphones.
Right. That's interesting because, they do say a lot of North Koreans are starving, but, yeah, a lot of them have smartphones. It's kind of interesting.
The world population has, 9 out of 10 people have a smartphone. There's more people with smartphones than there is people with clean water.
I think one reason, it's only speculation, it's not knowledge. I think one reason is because people who comply to the government and go to their jobs are rewarded. And there is a market for it there, and somebody's getting rich off of selling all these phones. So maybe there's even a black market. Who knows?
Right. And in every single phone has these elements that we're talking about. Like this country has copper. This country has, nickel. And they all try to compete for the deals. But everybody is using these things. Like, every phone has lithium. Every phone has gold. And there's these certain elements that they need a certain
amount. That's a good point. I'm going to be on the line the whole time, but I got to go pick my son up from work, and I've been bugging John and Don to call in. But I want to make one point before I start getting ready to go. There's problems in Venezuela now where I'm going to tie all this in with North Korea and Turkey. There's problems in Venezuela now, which used to be a stable and rich country under Hugo Chavez, even though he didn't like American presidents. So now there's people who are refugees in that country. There's instability in Turkey where over 6,000 people are jailed after that coup a year ago. There's instability in North Korea. I mean, what steady hand what's going to happen next in the world to throw everybody off the bandwagon. And plus, I read today that England, since they decided to depart from the EU, is doing much worse economically. So there's very few countries that have stability in the world. And with Trump alienated the left wing, I don't know how much more we have to go until we fall into a dark sea of chaos.
Yeah, I understand what you mean by the left wing of the political spectrum, basically the Democrats and, you know, versus the Republicans.
Well, not Democrats, just the Democrats, but people who don't want the world divided according to the color of your skin and your religion. Like,
on the left would be the Democrats and also the Green Party. On the right would be the Republicans, and then the Constitution Party, and just the the Reform Party is on the left. More on the, and then the right would be, I'm trying to remember, the Libertarian Party, that's on the right. That, you know, and so yeah, you got a lot of parties on the right and the left that kind of, they don't quite fit in the middle. Yeah. You know. But yeah,
right,
I understand.
Jill Stein doesn't speak for the majority of the Green Party. She just came out with kind of a anti-Hillary, pro-Trump kind of couple of statements.
Well, Jill Stein's been with the Green Party for quite a while. She, you know,
Albert, you indirectly worked for Jill Stein after Bernie dropped out, didn't you?
I kind of did some, how you say, sticker flyers, you know, but I did the whole phone banking thing where I did for Bernie.
Yeah, one thing I want to point this out, because I was kind of in close contact with Albert at that time, because he was very involved in the 2016 election. I didn't even really get involved with the election till the fall, and I didn't work for any. I worked more for the local senators than Al Franken, than I did for anybody else with phone calls. But since Albert was following Jill Stein, I used to go on her Twitter page a lot, and Albert may not appreciate me for saying this, but she did pretty much attack Hillary Clinton and the corporate political leaders quite a bit, to the point where I thought she was alienating the mainstream voters. Like, anyone who considered voting from her from the Democrat camp, I felt like her language was too strong, you know, to appeal to any mainstream voters.
Well, I think any informed candidate last year was attacking. Because I think that was a red line as far as our country goes for a lot of people that know about the Clinton deal.
Yeah,
I know, but that's not really the point. Because
you want to
compare.
Okay,
I understand it from your perspective, but you know what? Hillary Clinton's a woman still, and I just thought that Bernie Sanders, even though he didn't win, he ran an effective campaign without slaughtering anybody. Like, he didn't even verbally confronted Trump, but he didn't attack Trump.
Let me put it this way. Donald Trump talked a dozen times more shit about Hillary Clinton than Jill Stein did. That, you know, then Donald Trump is the one who won. So in comparison, Jill Stein barely even scratched the surface and talking smack about Hillary Clinton when you compare it to Donald Trump.
Yeah.
It was
just one thing
I noticed, you guys. I'm not saying, I didn't say it was the deal breaker. I'm just you know, like, I think she's she was a pro weed candidate. Like, I saw some people make some negative comments on her because she was pro marijuana. Like she was kind of an easy target. I don't know. It's not that I don't dislike her. I just think that something she did running her campaign, I would have done differently. Go ahead.
I think what changed it for a lot of people is when she went up to participate with the pipeline protests. A lot of people saw her spray paint on the bulldozer, and they were like, all right, she's absolutely nuts. And I think that ruined her entire campaign. There wasn't enough people that were supporting the protest. Everybody was on the fence about it, 50-50.
Well, you know, I wouldn't care anything about anybody spray paint anything. I mean, that would be like, you know, very. I mean, even Donald Trump said he can shoot somebody in the middle of the street, and it wouldn't even matter, you know. And
he said a lot of things, and that's what I was going to say about what you guys said about him attacking Hillary Clinton. It was all mostly character assassination. Like,
I didn't really say anything about him attacking Hillary. I just said that I felt like Jill Stein could have used a smoother transition pushing her campaign. She could have left Hillary Clinton out of the mix because Hillary is as far to the left in the mainstream as you're going to get.
Not always. In the 90s, she was against gay marriage.
Well, so was Paul Wellstone, and he was the most radical senator from the late 1990s to about when he died in that airplane crash. I believe it was in 2008. So I'm on the road now, you guys, so I'll still be listening and talking. I'm just letting you know.
All right.
Well, you know, even bringing up that election 2016 is devastating. It just seems like there was so much bad and icy blood between everybody.
Right, because it got away from it got even deeper than red and blue this year. This was really deep. Because there was a lot more to it. Hillary isn't just a Democrat. She's also a major player in the deep state. And not everybody that is a conspiracy theorist, you know, it's like there was a small number of conspiracy kind of people, the people that listened to Alex Jones, and then all of a sudden that exploded. So it's like almost her inside and backdoor deals were common knowledge. So it wasn't about her being a Democrat.
Okay, well, my question is for you is, how much influence does Hillary Clinton have now?
About the same.
Zero. Less than zero.
I saw a sponsored ad on Facebook from one of the Hillary groups that said, don't you wish Hillary Clinton was in office now? I mean, why would we even go back and fondly try to court that idea when it's not even kind of relevant?
Right. All right. Well, I was just bringing up the content of the attacks, which was Trump only mentioned the uranium a couple times, but he couldn't push that entire narrative, even though that's the strongest one against her, because there was,
you know,
other people.
A lot
involved
of people weren't paying attention, though, including me, because I didn't know about it till after the election. So,
right, and a lot of people voted without knowing.
You know, you can't really bitch about her uranium deals when he has, I'm not saying what kind of ties, but he has enough business deals in Russia to try to conceal part of his past. I mean, he's no angel either.
Right. Well, this is different. This is against the American people. When you actually make land deals that put farmers in prison just for their minerals in America and then make money off of it from another country, that's kind of a big deal. That's pulling the rug out from the Western United States and basically giving the money to foreign countries. Harry Reid was doing the same thing.
I do have a comparative suggestion regarding that comment. I was watching a CNN special tonight on the Rosenbergs, the husband and wife, Julius, and I think her name was Ethel, I don't remember. they were executed for stealing secrets and selling them to the Russians over the development of the atomic bomb. And the right-sided Americans that wanted them to die said that they were indirectly responsible for a lot of deaths in the, I believe it was the Korean War in the 50s, because of the Russia developed the nuclear bomb much faster. Now, I didn't catch the whole thing, but it's funny how, like, they were blaming two Jewish couples who ran, like, the secret. What they did is they recruited agents to get more information about scientific projects, but they also, they actually did defy the United States, and they had both of the sons on there tonight, who basically said after years of research, they realized their parents were traitors. So are you calling Hillary Clinton a traitor?
In so many words. Yeah.
Well, just how dangerous do you think Hillary would have been if she won the presidency? And do you think she would have protected Americans in a different, obviously she would have done it in a different way than Donald Trump because of her thinking and who she would have promoted, like, for the Supreme Court. But how much damage do you think she would have? Yeah. Go ahead, Albert.
I think she would have done all the damage.
Like, what would have really happened? Would we?
Well, she wouldn't have done completely different damage. I mean, obviously, Donald, it would have been the same because, look, check this out. Okay, when Barack Obama was president, right, more Mexicans, well, I would say more, not just Mexicans, more people in general got deported Barack Obama's era than Bush's era, you know, and Bush is a Republican, you know, and then we got Democrat, and then we're back to Republican being president, you know, it's Donald Trump now. You know what I mean? Either or, even Hillary Clinton, because, you know, Hillary Clinton is kind of the same, agrees with a lot of stuff that the Barack Obama, you know, has said and mentioned and done. She agrees with a lot of that stuff. And so if she would have been president, you know, we still would have got a lot of deportations, just like we were under Barack Obama's era. It would have been the same, and it's the same with Donald Trump. So it doesn't matter if you're on the left side or on the right side, it's still the same for a lot of that kind of stuff. And then, you know, and I can also talk about many other things that would be the same, like the, especially when it comes to, how do you say, offshore policy? No, wait. How do you say? Out of country policy? Not in the U.S. policy, but the
foreign
policy. Yeah, foreign policy. Yeah. When it comes to foreign policy, it always seems to be the same, no matter who the president is. The foreign policy is very, very similar, if not the same. But almost exactly the same or similar, but never different, but very the same. It's always the same thing, no matter who the president is when it comes to foreign policy. Except for domestic policy, we have had a couple of things change, like gay marriage and stuff like that. But foreign policy, that's always been the same. So that's my saying.
Right, and I think it's because the president, the office of president, isn't what it used to be. Now it's the CEO. And if you know about how big corporations work, it's the CEO doesn't have all the power. There's also a board. So I think what we're seeing is a president that really can't do much because there's a board, basically, that also have a say in what, I mean, those are the banking people and the, you know, the Federal Reserve people.
The ones that Federal Reserve.
Well, they do have some flexibility. We just sunk $17 billion into our new military defense plan, and they're building a new $30 billion naval aircraft, watercraft, an air slash whatever you call those things, those the ones that carry planes.
You spend a lot of money on those aircraft.
Yeah, they do.
They spend way too much.
Yeah.
Well, 30% of our budget goes to military, and another 30% goes to in-kind payments, which are already pre-designated before they even start penning the budgetary process.
Right.
So,
and we have bases all over the world. We got tankers all over the world. We got planes that only land to refuel. We've got a lot of stuff flying around and floating around and swimming around, and bases in almost every country. So,
I wanted to mention that John and Don, if you called in, you can't get in the show right now because I'm driving my son home. So call back in 20 minutes. So okay, you guys can continue now that I made that announcement.
Oh yeah, bases all over the world. It's the how you say the new world order. That's the if we remember anything.
I wanted to get back to why I think Hillary lost and what she would have done. Also, at the same time, I know that's over with, but one thing she made clear was that she was basically declaring the NRA a terrorist organization. And that's not really a partisan thing. There's a lot of people that appreciate the Second Amendment who are members of the NRA who heard her say that. So that was a big thing. And then the other character part of her that was when she did that interview and she said how we came, we saw, he died, and then she cracked up laughing about Gaddafi. That shows that she takes murder really lightly, or death, anyway. And she can joke about taking somebody down. The way he was, like, basically beaten to death.
That's kind of a morbid comparison. Did she really say that?
She did.
Yeah,
you can find it on a video. She said, we came, we saw, he died, and she cracked up laughing. But then, if you see the video of him getting dragged through the street all bloody, that's gut-wrenching. To know that
okay,
that's
well,
the way Gaddafi
was. Gaddafi was
died.
A dictator for years, but I don't think, comparatively speaking, you can compare that incident to how gun-toting rednecks try to flaunt their Second Amendment rights. I mean, it's okay to want to possess a gun, but when
don't
you put it as a top priority against other difficulties our country is facing, like, I think some people have gone too far with their gun rights.
The NRA is nowhere near a terrorist organization. I'm not speaking up for people that try to intimidate others on the street corner because of the Second Amendment. Those are the kind of people that they kind of scare families. But
well, I think one thing that go ahead.
For somebody to carry wherever they go, like a sidearm doesn't freak people out. I respect somebody that's safe and respectful who's carrying. You know, I won't look twice at somebody if they're carrying. If they're acting like a normal person, that's fine. But people that stand around with AR-15s in a downtown, they know they're going to be questioned by police. They know people will call the cops on them. So it's more of a political statement at that point.
A lot of times the media only shows NRA people that are adamant about their rights. They don't show the average person who's just wanting to go hunting and fishing. So the other thing, though, is Ben, before you joined our show, we had a caller from St. Louis, Missouri, a black guy who was at a Trump rally, and he was carrying a large weapon because it's an old carrying concealed state. And he was talking about how people would react to him if he was carrying a weapon versus not carrying a weapon. But he felt pretty secure in a crime-ridden city like St. Louis carrying a weapon at a Trump rally, even though he was black.
Yeah, see, it's not a race thing, and it's not. A lot of people say the NRA is all just angry old white gun-toting Bible thumpers, but it's not. There's women, there's every race you can think of, and they have commercials with all kinds of people on them. Of course, they're trying to put that out there also. But
I do think, though, in the way that the world has shrunk, and, like, I live in a northern city of 86,000, but there's plenty of grass and forests and remote areas up here, so it's a little different, but if you're in a big city like New York, the possession of a gun is a little different because even if you're using it for self-defense, it might come back to bite you.
Right, and the city of New York has passed gun laws that are basically unconstitutional, but they were, since they're more of a democracy, that means that they can vote whatever they want, and it doesn't... That's why there should be a democratic republic bound by the Constitution. Because nobody wants a full-on democracy because everybody around you can vote your rights away. So there needs to be a set
of... The problem with freedom is people like that Jared guy who shot Gabby Giffords. There's a gun available for the crackpot and the rational person. But guns don't really serve a bigger purpose unless you're hunting or fishing. I mean, they are produced to kill.
You're missing the whole point of the Second Amendment. It was basically written into law forever that, yes, we took our country, we fended off the extreme taxing king, and this is how we did it, and this is going to stay forever.
The reason
so
that
people,
they did it is because the citizens wanted the right to
defend themselves for the government.
Hold the guns because the English were oppressive over them. So
right. They
wanted it as a self-protection in case there was another subversive government.
Right. So
and back in those days, the government
fishing.
Could overpower people. But now, we're just a sea of 300 million Americans with everyone who has their own idea.
Right. But the Constitution
okay.
is still there.
I know. One second, please. You guys feel free to talk. I was just dropping my phone up.
Okay.
Where's Albert?
I'm right here.
Okay, well, you guys kind of have to carry the weight when I'm in the middle of this stuff. My face keeps hitting the phone, sorry. Albert, what's your opinion of people carrying guns, and do you think it's necessary, and does it differ from city to city and different kinds of places?
Well, I mean, we can do what Australia did. And ban all these semi-automatic guns, which was almost all the guns, and do that. But, what happened to Australia after that is a lot of the home invasions increased, so a lot of burglars started, breaking into people's houses because they knew it. They didn't have guns to defend themselves. That started to increase a lot. And for some reason, even though armed robbery didn't seem to really decline, because criminals get their hands. They don't follow the law. I mean, they're just, they're going to get their guns at the black market anyways. So,
right.
Gun regulations only hurt law-abiding citizens.
Right, and same with gun-free zones. Is criminals know that a gun-free zone is going to be least resistance.
I do think, though, that certain societies, I live right across the Canadian border, about an hour and 10 minutes away. I mean, like, people in southern Manitoba, they don't lock their doors. There's more space and stability in places where guns aren't as prominent.
Oh, yeah.
You
could
say the same thing for the opposite, too. Look at some of the communities in Texas and Oklahoma and Missouri. The farm communities are the same way. They don't lock their doors. They're armed to the teeth. People don't ever try and steal their car.
Yeah.
You can say the same thing for both sides.
If they were about people getting killed and murdered, I mean, guns is like the least thing to worry about. Because I mean, you worry about the math people getting killed and murdered. I would worry most about drunk people. I mean, drunk people, drunk drivers kill more people, a lot more people than, you know, people with guns. And so if they really wanted to do something about people dying and whatnot, instead of attacking people with guns, they would attack drunk drivers, per se, you know?
Well, I'm a Christian, and I lived in one of the toughest areas of L.A., East L.A., Boyle Heights. And my religion says he who lives by the sword dies by the sword. And even though there were 16 shots against a house, two houses down from where I live, I never thought about buying a gun.
Well,
so
yeah,
how many...
You don't have to.
Yeah, go ahead.
But you have the right to.
How many middle class, this is kind of a biased question, but I'm just going to ask it anyway. How many middle class Caucasian people do you think buy guns just out of fear and self-protection, like not for a sport or hobby?
Do we have to classify all white people as Caucasian?
No, but I'm just saying, let's say there's a suburban woman with four kids in Littleton, Colorado, or Edina, Minnesota. Does she really need a gun, even though there's no man in the house?
Well, when you talk about the middle class, you know, American, that comes from grassroots, where their dads and grandpa and great-great-grandpa were born here in the United States, and they were, you know, they were there when the Second Amendment was there, and they, you know, so they're pretty much used to it, and their grassroots are born and raised by Second Amendment and the other amendments, and so, you know, when you talk about gun rights,
I don't think, but see, my family never owned guns, but my friend Astra, her 13-year-old boy went to play at another boy's house in Badness Heights, Minnesota, and his friend took a gun out of the dad's cabinet, and later it was found to be defective, but the gun went off and killed my friend's son. So, I mean, like some families have a tradition of it and some don't. I never saw the likes of a gun in my life, except for when I dated this one guy in my 20s.
Yeah, but then there's other ways to have accidental murders. Like, you know, you get run over. Maybe that kid would have got run over. Or maybe he was playing with the wires from back behind the refrigerator and got electrocuted to death, maybe. Or maybe, you know what I mean, there's a lot of different ways that, you know, people die.
Well, the fact of the matter is if the cabinet had been locked, he would have never died.
Well,
and if there would have been more parental supervision.
Also, too, if the medicine cabinet would have been locked, a lot of other kids wouldn't swallow medicine that they should have been swallowing and wouldn't died because the medicine cabinets don't get locked. And so
what's the point of it? Because a lot of kids nowadays are into emo and self-cutting and crazy shit for attention. So unless their mind's thinking about that stuff, they're not going to do it. Right?
There's so many ways to lose your gun rights before you even have them nowadays.
Exactly.
Exactly. And let's just say you have a really toxic medicine that can, like, kill a lot of people, right? Like, very, very toxic. You kill people with that medicine, you can't lose it. You tell, like, just so that those doctors still keep on sending it to you, and you can keep on mixing it up and making some crazy drugs and keep on killing more people with poison. Who knows how many people you can poison, but they'll still keep on giving it to you. Yeah. And if you had a gun, you kill somebody, boom, it'll be gone before you know it. You lose your gun right so fast, you won't even know what hit you.
By the way, I'm back home now in about 10 seconds, so if John and John are on the line, I'll pull you in. I do think this type of discussion is only going to lead to more divisiveness because it's unsolved. We have people who have guns, and a lot of people have guns, and there's probably a certain percentage that misuse them, or there's even 5% of the population that plan homicides that they never carry out. But in general, a gun is a weapon.
Right. Well, I'm not trying to talk you into being a part of the gun culture. All I'm saying is that it's a right. Whether you appreciate or use it or not, it's a right that's actually written down in the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights. And a lot of people just don't prefer it, but they can't remove that from the Bill of Rights.
Well, I think because our society has become so dangerous, and people, I do know all about history because that's what I majored in, and we had to analyze the Bill of Rights. At that point in history, England had that type of oppressive regime where it wasn't so much authoritarian, but people had to leave Europe in order to have a free life. So they were distrustful of a central government. So a lot of those, like there was many drafts of the Constitution. There was the Virginia one and another one, and they wanted to leave out the idea of a central government. They wanted regional government. Just the bigger the government was, the more they distrusted it. And that's why they needed individual protection with guns. But now guns have turned into an ugly thing in many ways.
Only in the hands of ugly people.
Right. But let's face it, human nature is dangerous.
Also, the gangs aren't the best representation for how a gun works either. The mafia, the gangs, the black market, none of that is a representation of a right to bear arms. They don't use it as a right. They use it as, force to do illegal stuff.
Well, they don't follow the rules and laws and regulations, so that's why they buy in the black market. That's why they buy without following the rules. So no matter how many rules you put on it, they're not going to follow them anyway, so they're going to get their hands on the gun anyway.
Right.
If you have to defend yourself, you got to be able to defend yourself. You know what I mean? And if you're a law-abiding citizen and you can't even buy a gun, but the next door neighbor is a hardcore criminal, he's got plenty of guns. How's that fair?
Right, and I wouldn't expect every single mother or every 18-year-old or anyone that can't control their emotions or has serious anger problems, I wouldn't expect any of those people to go buy a gun. But the ones that, the ranching families or the families that taught their kids gun safety from an early age, the ones that really appreciate it, or somebody who could save somebody else's life shouldn't be disarmed because of a popular gun legislation in the ballot. You shouldn't disarm the good people.
Yeah. And in many cases, they've been, you see these terrorist attacks and these good people come out, barehanded just to take these bad guys down, I mean, you see the gunshots and, they start coming up and shooting at the place and these guys just come out. They have no gun in their hand, but they come out and they do and do whatever it can to grab the guy and take him down, you know. And it's just ridiculous how what they have to do now.
Yeah, that just happened in Starbucks. Did you see that video that came out, I think, today?
No, I didn't.
Now tell us.
There's a guy with a mask on came in to rob a Starbucks. He had a gun and a knife. He pulled the knife out first, and then he put the gun in the same hand as the knife. And he was holding a bag, telling her to fill it with the money. And some guy came up behind him and smashed a chair over him and beat him down and stabbed him with his own knife.
And what Old kind of video was this? A YouTube video?
Well, it was also on Twitter. It was right next to the other thing I saw. But I couldn't tell if it was somebody. It looked like a surveillance camera because it was really still. It wasn't moving. But you can see someone's hand. So I couldn't tell if someone was actually standing there filming that or what.
Creepy.
I couldn't imagine standing and filming a robbery going down when somebody's actually trying to fight the guy. Why would you stand there and film it?
A lot of comments have been made like that, like when that guy down, that Sterling guy, I think his name was, down in New Orleans, who sold $5 videos in front of a store, and three or four people taped the cop shooting them, and nobody did anything about it. They just continued to, the civilians continued to videotape the murder pretty much by the cops.
Yeah.
I think they filed a lawsuit now with the city, but it happened at least a year ago. So, here, let me look it up. It wasn't New Orleans. It was that other smaller city in Louisiana. Anyways, I just talked to John briefly, and he can't call in tonight, which I'm a little bummed. And then Don called me an hour before the show, and now he's not even calling in. So, should we transition now to maybe? I want to read something about Alton Sterling, okay? Because
okay.
I remember watching, it took place in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He was a 37-year-old black man who was shot several times at close range while being held down on the ground by two Baton Rouge police officers, Howie Lake and Blaine Salamone. Police were responding to a report that a man in a red shirt was selling CDs and that he used a gun to threaten a man outside the convenience store. The shooting was recorded by multiple bystanders. A loaded .38 caliber revolver was in Sterling's right front pocket, which he never took out, by the way. The whole thing was is that this guy wasn't the brightest bulb on the tree. He was just a local man who was selling videos to get by. He had a couple kids, and the owner of the store, Abdullah Muflafi, he was like a Middle Eastern guy who owned a 7-Eleven type store. He vouched for Sterling, saying that, just a minute, the owner of the store, Abdullah Muflahi, said that Sterling had been carrying a gun a few days prior to the event, as other CD vendors had been robbed recently. Muflahi said that Sterling was not causing trouble during the situation that led to the police call. And he was just like a regular guy. He didn't have a good job, and that's why he had to sell those videos. And I don't know. I just think that for them to think someone like that was a threat was way over the top.
Well, the gun was reported. So what was he doing with his gun out? How did somebody know that he had a gun in his pocket unless it was out of his pocket?
I have the answer to that question in just a minute.
And
at 12:35 a.m. on Foster Drive in the parking lot of Triple S Food Mart, Sterling was detained by Baton Rouge police officers. This came after an anonymous caller reported that a man was threatening him and waving a handgun while selling CDs. The officers tased Sterling for resisting, then forced the heavyset man in the hood of the sedan to the ground. Sterling was pinned to the ground by both officers, one kneeling on his chest and the other his thigh, both attempting to control his arms. One officer exclaimed, "He's got a gun, he's got a gun." One of the officers yelled, "If you effing move, I swear to God." Then Salamoni, the other cop, was heard on video saying, "Lake, he's going for the gun." One of the officers aimed his gun at Sterling's body, then shot him three times. The camera panned away just before the camera panned back, and three more gunshots were heard. I don't know. To me, I heard other stories at the time, and he was not waving a gun. But needless to say,
well, I have two more questions.
Less than 2 months ago, they filed the family filed something against the city.
I have two more questions about that. Was the gun his? Was it registered to him? And did he have his rights to carry still?
Well, I don't know. Maybe we can tackle that next week. I guess the biggest impression I got from the whole thing is that I've lived in the South before. I've lived in North Carolina and Virginia, North Carolina. And this might sound stupid, but there's a lot of poor people walking around. You know what I mean? But the store owner said that he wasn't a threat, and whoever called, I don't know what they had in mind, but he was shot in cold blood through the chest. So that was just another incident where they didn't subdue him.
Well, you kind of put some bias into that. You're sticking up for his character, saying he's just an average guy and saying that he was killed in cold blood. That's kind of...
The only reason I'm saying that, Ben, is not because I'm a liberal, but because when I lived in Los Angeles, I lived in North Hollywood, I had a friend who lived in South Central, there's a lot of people on the street selling stuff. You know, like some of it's bootleg, like black market videos that they taped in the theater. Some of it's just like a lot of Latinos walk around with kids' toys and piñatas. Like, to me, he didn't seem like a threat to society. But it's from my perspective, you're right.
Now also, if you're talking about selling videos, the very beginning of every movie you watch, why does it have that FBI warning about piracy? You're committing a crime that has to do with the FBI.
Well, you can't challenge me. If people in L.A. are deciding to go in a movie theater and taping CDs, what do you think I can do about it? You know, I'm not going to go hunt them down on the street.
No, it's not your responsibility.
Technically, I could, but I don't have the authority.
What I'm saying is that there's a difference between robbing a 7-Eleven and robbing a post office, because a post office is federal. A 7-Eleven isn't. It's still robbery, but you're also choosing your battles.
Yeah, but he wasn't robbing. He was selling videos in front of a store. Are you saying they're robbing because they stole merchandise from the theater?
No, I was just bringing up just the fact of people that sell videos, because I've been to places where they sell them too, illegal copies. But you got to remember, that's the FBI takes care of that.
And here's the funny thing, because every big time politician and big time people that have something to say against guns, and they're against guns, all those big time politicians and famous people, they're all protected by heavily armed security anyways. But and I can mention many, but I'll just mention Hillary Clinton, because she was the most popular one, you know, against guns. But, she was always against guns, but she was always protected by heavily armed, basically military, you know. And it's kind of awkward, you know, to say that you're against it, but then still have, you know, all the guns protecting you. So it's kind of like
hypocritical
or
What was that word I would use? A predicament?
It's hypocritical.
Yeah, hypocritical.
We're probably... Oh, no. My computer just shut down from possible damage. So, hopefully I won't lose you guys. But I have a quick question. Did you guys hear about that shooting in Minneapolis? That where that Australian woman was killed by police. She lived in Minnesota a while, and she was she was reporting a domestic violence in the neighborhood, and she ran in the street, and she was shot and killed.
Who was she shot and killed by? What was the policeman?
A Minneapolis police officer, but I don't have the details. I guess I don't know why he shot her, but she was trying to report a crime. So,
My computer just crashed, so I
can't tell you why. But in that case, it was a white woman from another country. And then what happened in the aftermath is that the police chief who had been in charge 15 years resigned, and the mayor said that more has to be done as far as training. So it did cause one resignation. But... it was almost July 6th of last year, Philando Castile was killed. So Minneapolis has been under the public scrutiny for quite a while now.
I thought that was a Muslim police officer that killed her.
Okay, well, maybe I can tell you in a minute after my computer's rebooting right now. I have the screen back up.
If that's the same one that... I was reading about, I don't remember, I've skimmed through a few of them, but if that was the one I was reading about, he failed his psych test. He failed a bunch of tests. It was basically like he got special treatment to be a police officer. And
well, let me look it up quick, okay, because I'm almost to the window now. I do want to point one thing out. It's not always about race, because... Geronimo Yanez, the one who shot Philando Castile, he was another ill-prepared officer, and he was Latino, so it wasn't a white-on-black crime. It was just the fact that he wasn't prepared.
Right. Well, was he the top of his class, or did he have favors done for him to be a police officer, too, because of his race?
Well... he got fired immediately after the trial, but even though that the Philando Castile people lost. I think he was at the bottom of his class. I'm going to look up the Australian. I have the page up now. Her name was... she was an Australian native, age 40, who moved to Minnesota in 2014. Her last name was Russ. R-U-S-C-C-Z-Y-A-C, Russisk. And, okay, my computer is acting up. So we're not going to be able to talk about the details. Can we take, like, a quick 5-minute break? I think we should end the show in 15 minutes, but I want to ask you guys something to throw this in here. What other nights are you... I want to do a midweek show, so sometimes when John can't call in. Is there any other nights that are good for you guys after 7 o'clock?
No, I'm good for this.
This is only for people who can't call in on Sunday nights. What's your situation?
I don't have
Ben, you've been consistent, but lately John's been kind of a flake. And Albert has called in on our midweek shows before. Albert, are you still with us?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm good anytime, yeah.
Yeah, if you let me know what night you're thinking about, I can let you know if I can do it or not. I have a couple of trips coming up, so I'm not sure. And I know at my grandparents' house, I get zero reception. So when I'm there, there's none. But that's where I'm going.
I'm going to Milwaukee the week of August 1st through the 5th.
And I'll be gone the 5th through the 12th.
But I will be home that Sunday, which I believe is the 6th. What day is the 5th? Do you know what day the 5th is?
I don't. I can...
Are you going to see your grandparents in the woods?
No, it's not in the woods. I mean, but where they live, they're on top of a hill, and there's a cell tower right next to them. But right on top of that hill, for some reason, there's zero reception at all in any cell phone.
That's a bummer.
Yep.
Well, because I can't bring up any more details on the internet, I'm going to do my conclusion. So mine is that one thing is that I've heard complaints in the media because of all this controversy with the Russian infiltration of the election. Trump hasn't gotten his agenda off the ground. But the truth is that he doesn't have a consensus in the Senate for a health care bill, and that Dianne Feinstein said last week that both his son and Manafort are going to be subpoenaed. So even if it's a false or true claim, the Democrats are going to go ahead with their witch hunt. But I do think my friend Ronick, who's from Bangladesh, she does think that the Russians are the cause of the chaos in the world, and they have the United States in their back pocket. And for us, I don't even know if our country at this time is capable of handling a North Korean crisis, except for we have good intelligence like the NSA. But I don't know if the White House can even handle a situation like that. They can't be in an overreactive mode. And I think with all the problems that we discussed in Turkey and other places around the world, that there's going to have to be some kind of alliance that keeps things in check, whether it's NATO or something else. So I do think, I do agree with Trump in some ways that a lot of the conflict in America alone is media driven, but I don't think that he has a grasp on all the subjects, and that it's kind of preventing him from being very effective. So that's just kind of a general statement, but it's my conclusion tonight.
Okay.
Okay, while you guys go, I'm going to try to look up the cop who killed that Australian. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Go ahead, Albert.
Somebody.
I'm good. I'm actually painting something right now.
Okay. Well, I heard a good quote from Jordan Peterson, my favorite psychologist, and he was talking about stories that are they're true no matter what time. He reads a lot of Dostoevsky and Nietzsche and Jung. And he's talked about Freud, but he said a quote, and I think he was referring to some of the children's movies like Pinocchio. He likes to talk about Pinocchio. And he said, fiction tells you the truth by lying to you. And it made a lot of sense.
Yeah, well, history is written by the winners. I mean, and I hear some people, they talk about the history and they try to, you know, convert it. I mean, like they try to mix the history up with present day and some kind of root to it. You know what I mean? And I was like, I don't really care anything about the history. If there's no actual evidence of that history and you're just talking about really old history, that just
that this, it's been written in the books, but there's no actual, like, video footage, no actual some kind of evidence or something. You know what I mean? Like hard evidence. I mean hard evidence. Because all history, I just ignore it because, like I always say, history is always written by the winners.
Me and you had a fight about that once. Me and Albert had a fight about that once because I was telling him about critical thinkers like Jean-Jacques Rousseau and John Locke, who made, the proposal that exchanging natural rights for some civil rights and all the basis for law. And Albert and I were trying to argue. I said in the pre-video and internet age, people only drew knowledge and sources from books.
Right. Right, and we're at an information age now where old evidence, like old pictures, can be created. People can basically create a black and white photo that looks like documented evidence. They can create forms. They can create birth certificates. I mean, we're at a time where you can basically believe what you want. You have to decide what to believe. Because there's,
Don't forget,
a lot of things can be created to look real nowadays. Everything from documents to videos and definitions. I think that was one of the most important things about the Constitution was that the words were chosen carefully, and then they had to be defined. So the definition of each word in the Constitution could be looked up in the dictionary, and the dictionary would tell you what the Constitution says. If you try and change that, then the meanings of everything isn't even true anymore. You have to keep the definitions meaning the same thing as the words.
By the way, I found out about the cop who, killed that woman. His name was Mohammed Noor. It looks like he might have been Ethiopian or Somalian, and he went on a fast-track program to graduate from the Minneapolis Police Cadet Program. It's a 7-month training, which is quicker, non-traditional route. And he was paid $20 an hour while he went through Hennepin Technical College to get license. And then his salary bumped after he graduated.
I'll just keep my mouth shut. You said enough right there.
Okay, well, why don't you research it before next week? But basically, I saw another article quick before my computer crashed that said that both officers heard a loud noise before he shot the woman. I still don't know why he shot her, but I know she was trying to report a domestic violence problem in the neighborhood. But he had only been on the job about a year. So, but sorry to interrupt your other comment, but before next week, are you going to be on the air next week, Ben?
I'm not sure. I'll probably be out of town, going out to the lake for the weekend. Not sure if I'll ever set
them. Okay, well, why don't you text me on Friday
night?
But if you do have time to discuss it, his name is Mohamed. There's no double consonants in his name. It's just Mohamed, Mohamed, Noor, Noor. So with that, since Albert said he didn't really have a conclusion, do you guys mind if we just end the show?
Yeah, I'm good.
Sure.
Okay, well, next week Don will probably talk about his trip to Baltimore and the NAACP convention. Donald Trump was the only president in the last 30 years that declined an invitation to speak at the NAACP convention. Okay?
Well, yeah, that might have been a smart move. He didn't have a whole lot of support there.
Well, you know what, Ben, though? He was the one bitching about crime in Chicago, so you shouldn't really ignore a whole race just because you're not doing well in the polls. I mean,
I don't think it was ignoring, but maybe it could have turned into a huge explosion of protesting, and maybe he kind of was advised to stay back.
Well, I know, but the president of the United States, and he's president of everybody.
That's true, but there's been a lot of very real death threats lately. It's almost like it's popular. So it's a little
different
now.
Trump?
Yeah.
You've
seen them all over the place.
No, I haven't seen them. Okay, bye, Albert and Ben. I'm not playing a song. I can't get any of my windows up, so I'm just... thank you for calling in. I'll find out why John didn't call in. But at least we all three
all
of
right.
us got to talk. God bless you all. Have a good night. Thank you for your participation. Bye.
Bye.